Raiders Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Welcome to the Science Experiment. It's Sabres Live inside of KeyBank Center on this day. It's a Tuesday, and my partner...
It's Monday.
It's your Monday. It's everyone else's Tuesday for two guys that struggle with days of the week. We have now set that in stone. It is, in fact, Tuesday. The science component to today's show is the fact that for almost 2 years, I've been experiencing ear discomfort / loss of hearing. And in recent months, it's been more pronounced with consistent ringing in the ear. However, after 4 days of not being with you,
it feels better.
Today is the first day, ironically, while I was getting my eyes checked, that the ringing went away. So let's revisit this at 12:54 today and see where I'm at, okay?
Talk to Ryan Miller. He still talks about his ears ringing from his all the ears. Tape I put around my ankles, and Henrik Lundqvist said the same thing. So maybe that I am the problem. I am definitely the science experiment. But I'll tell you this. I think everybody that was at the golf tournament I was at yesterday have their ears ringing.
Why? What because, did you say?
Oh, it was so fun. So Brooks TLC is a hospital foundation in the Dunkirk-Fredonia area, and they do a golf tournament at Shorewood Country Club.
You've been before.
I've been before. I was there last year. Razor and I were there last year. We were again there this year. Now, Rob Ray doesn't hit golf balls. He doesn't play golf. So he's on the sixth hole, and if you've been to Shorewood Country Club, it's like 120-yard par three with the green the size of this table.
Oh.
And but he sits there, and he
they
heckles
call that
everybody.
A postage stamp green, right?
Pretty much, yes. It's a postage stamp green. And it looks like an easy shot. It's not. Well, Razor's there heckling everybody, having fun, whatever. And they got jello shots at that hole, which Razor doesn't drink.
Also not so participating in, yeah.
Participate, but everybody's having a good time. I'm on the 15th hole, and I was there last year, and I was there again this year. For those that have played the golf course knows that the 15th hole is a 210-yard par 3. So it played downwind a little bit. I started,
driver.
Yeah, well.
For me.
I started with a six iron playing up in the air into the wind, and then I kept getting just short a little bit. Then I went to a 5-iron, and it was better. And then the wind started to change. Now I'm going down to 4-iron, and I'm thinking like rescue club or whatnot. But it was actually a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I had a few adult beverages throughout the day.
Jello?
No, I didn't do the jello okay. shots. But then, so Mike Gilbert, former PR guy here, and he's kind of, you know, running the things, and he gets to my hole. But he was not playing. He was just driving around. And there's like four foursomes backing up.
Oh, gosh.
So I'm like, it's not my fault. It's a par three that's 210 yards. That's what's going on. He's like, hurry up, Marty. Let's go. People are waiting. We had a blast. We had a lot of fun. Raised a lot of money. Great turnout. Great people. Now, I always feel bad because we meet a lot of people at the games, at different events, on location, in the Sabrehood, whatever, right?
And you don't remember names?
You don't remember names, and you're like, I remember these people, but I don't remember where or from.
It's only concerning when you don't remember meeting them, that which is now where I'm at.
Well,
it's not. It's,
I usually
it's not
remember
only
meeting the people, but it's like, remind me again where we met, how did that work? And then so this group comes up, and I'm like, oh, hey, how you guys doing? And I'm like, they look very familiar. But I'm like, you're not in Buffalo also. You're like in Dunkirk. So I'm like, you guys were here last year, right? And they're like, oh, yeah, we were here last year. We're also on your boat at the fishing event that we did a month
like
ago.
A month
I'm
ago.
Like, oh, my gosh, I'm so sorry. Yes, but like it's because your brain is on golf and
right.
on different locations. Yeah. So. I always feel bad, but we have a great time.
I used to be really good at facial and name recognition, and post-COVID, it all disappeared. And it makes me feel guilty when you see familiar faces and can't put the name
yeah.
of the face. But the point is, we're all kind of in the Sabrehood together. You had a great day yesterday. We're going to be right in the middle
yes.
of it with Sabres Live in the Sabrehood on Thursday at the Amherst Ale House. I mean, I mentioned yesterday, like, talk about a great venue. Yes. I mean, it is a legendary Western New York venue. And being a Northtown entity, a lot of hockey connections, a lot of, you know, hockey players and hockey families have, you know, resided there over the last couple of decades. So join us at the Amherst Pizza and Ale House. Craig Meany's going to stop by, represent the Sabres alumni. But we'll have trivia and prizes and all the rest. And, of course, Sabres Live to close out the week. I can't wait. Yeah, last week was an amazing launch for us at Johnson's Landing.
Yeah, it was awesome last week at Johnson's Landing. A lot of fans, beautiful patio. I cannot wait to do this again on Thursday. Now, you know what's funny? Because it says it's on Cross Point Parkway in Gettysville. Mm-hmm. When I first got to Buffalo, I remembered Williamsville, East Amherst,
Clarence,
maybe a little bit, but Gettysville, I was like, where the heck is Gettysville?
Because right, Michael, smack in all of it, yeah.
Michael Pekka lived in Gettysville, so when he would say, hey, guys, come to my house, here's the address, it said Gettysville, my thinking was I was driving an hour away,
yeah,
and it's right there, like in that little pocket that everybody calls Gettysville.
Better than Spalding Lake Wi-Fi?
I bet you that was way better than Spalding Lake Wi-Fi. Although now I think Pex is in Spalding Green Wi-Fi, so it's a different location.
Maybe an upgrade for him.
Maybe, who knows?
And we, of course, look forward to seeing you at the Ale House on Thursday at noon and or just before. And, of course,
get your trivia
after.
Answers ready because you had some great trivia on Thursday.
I have to tweak the trivia because apparently it was a little too difficult and I was left with an awful lot in the prize bag. So I would like to be more generous and give away even more on Thursday. And
your
guess
what?
Your
first question was awesome. Who led the team in game-winning goal this year?
Yeah, I thought it was reasonably easy.
We talk about it all the time, how Jason Zucker was led the team.
No, he gets most of his attention for leading the team in
power play goals as
and
well.
Not as much game winners. Yeah. But yes, that was the correct answer. Now, if you want to win a pair of tickets to see Nate Bargatze here at KeyBank Center, let me tell you something. Now is the opportunity you've been waiting for. All you have to do is tweet your favorite Nate Bargatze reference and send it to us at Sabres Live. And if Marty reads your tweet at the end of Thursday's show when we are on location in the Saberhood, you will be a winner.
I'm going to pick the winner basically coming from my favorite Nate Bargatze line. So tweet at Sabres Live your favorite line. Like, I was dying because I was telling my son today that I love Nate Bargatze and he's got some great lines and he did the Saturday Night Live skit about the metric system and all of that. It's so
funny,
right?
Which would appeal to a Canadian like you.
Exactly. Yes. But one of the funnier ones, because I've got a lot of dogs, is that he goes, you know, I wanted to get a second dog and my wife says, two dogs is way too hard to take care of. It's only one dog. He goes, I don't get it. You open the door for one dog to go outside, or you open the door for two dogs to go outside. What's the difference? And it's simple, but it's so funny. And I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people that had that conversation about dogs and about a lot of other things. So anyway, don't use that one, but there's a lot of other ones you can use. So, and maybe you use it in a hockey context or in a Sabres Live context. Bonus point for that. But by the end of Thursday's show, I will have gone through all of the reference to Nate Bargatze that you guys put on social media, and then I will pick one. That person will be the winner.
Western New York hockey legend Andrew Podorowski going to join us in studio later in the show here on Sabres Live today. He is an avid golfer. You were just out on the course.
Yes.
It is time for Dis or Dat, rating some golf swings of two of the greatest players in the NHL today who were playing at their teammates' invitational, Zach Hyman.
Yes.
And we're talking about Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. Dis or Dat, who's got the better swing?
First of all, they're both lefties, right? They both shoot left in hockey, so they're both lefties. Connor McDavid had the left foot followed through, like almost like a slapper in softball, right? Running through the shot. It was very slap shotty, very stiff. I think that Leon Draisaitl has a little bit more lube in his joints. Very short backswing, which I do, you do as well now. I think it's come in with age a little bit.
No, it's always been there. That's been my actual demise, I think. But
Yeah, but I'm going to give Leon Draisaitl the best or the better golf swing out of this or that. Not sure about the socks, though. He's got them way up like tennis. I was wearing my socks like this the other day, and my daughter was like, Dad, pull the socks down. I'm like, no, they're comfortable. I don't like pulling. I'm going to wear like the short sock if I want a short sock. But, this has a tennis feel to Leon Draisaitl.
It definitely has a tennis feel, but I think the higher sock has definitely gained in popularity once again because everything fashion is cyclical over the last 5 years.
Bad tan lines, though. Terrible tan lines when you put the socks up for a full round of golf.
It's probably a fair point, but I do think Leon appeared to be a more, like, you know, refined golfer, just the way he set up and approached the ball. Less so with the backswing.
The waggle a little bit. Is that what you say? The waggle. He had the waggle going.
How about the kid mentioned yesterday? Won the PGA event on the weekend.
Driver on 18.
Jackson Corbin, yeah.
He hit the ball 2 inches behind. He actually took a divot, and they went like 220 yards.
My career.
But it was a par five, so then he laid up and then still made par. No bogeys for all four rounds.
And 10 under the previous round, It was unbelievable. I mean, third pro event, you know, missed the cut, top 10, and now a win. And he's now right on the cut for qualifying for the FedEx playoff series. Yes. Like, it's wild.
He may be a captain's pick for the tournament.
Amazing.
But how about this? He said, like, as he was on the back nine, people kept yelling at him, Scotty's coming for you. That was nerve-wracking. Yeah. People tell him that.
Well, you know, it would be nerve-wracking as a current player to go through the arbitration process.
Yes. I loved it.
Every year, because you're a talker, every year we see players file. And we wonder, although we're usually largely skeptical about the process, how many of them will actually get to the finish line and go through a hearing. This year, 15 players filed for arbitration, and not a one of them made it to the finish line, meaning their finish line came early and they all got deals done with their respective teams. So, because we haven't had the chance to put a bow on this in the month of July, and it's largely after free agency at the start of the month, it becomes one of the talking points throughout the month. Who won in pre-arbitration among the 15 winners, if you will?
So this is interesting because you can look at it as, well, whoever got the most money won, whoever got the longest deal won, whoever got maybe the biggest increase from maybe where it was before. I've got a few names written on my list here, and I have a hard time picking a winner because I could look at Jason Robertson saying a one-year $12 million is a win for him because in a year he'll be...
It's a win for Dallas, not a win for him.
Because he signed, but at the same time, he's a UFA in a year, and maybe Dallas gives him a long term. Maybe he goes anywhere else, but I'm not going to pick him as the winner. Then I'm like, Cole Perfetti, 5 years at $6 million is a huge deal for him. But he could easily be a 20 goals, 40-point guy, 60 points, a 20 goals, 40 assists, 60-point guy, and $6 million is nothing. So there's a lot there. I think that my two winners are Trevor Zegras, who is a 4 years at $9.125 million. Yes, he had a good year last year with the Flyers, his first season in Philly, and there's a lot of skills there. But there's always the other shoe that is like, well, when he doesn't get involved, he's not interested. You get the kind of year that he had in Anaheim before getting out. If you're paying him $9 million, I'm saying that almost feels like a Jeff Skinner type of contract where you're like, you're paying him for what he just did to you, but the other shoe could always drop, and then that becomes a problem. So Zegras for me is a winner. And the other winner, I think you would agree with me, Duffer, is here in Buffalo and Peyton Krebs. Because Peyton Krebs got to play up on the top line, on the top six, got to play in situations that maybe he won't get to play again. Because you look at that top nine right now, there's 10 players, 11 with Krebs, whatnot. So $4.5 million for 4 years as a quote-unquote fourth liner, that's a really good deal with Krebs. Now, I get why the Sabres gave him that money, and he was going to get that for sure, maybe more in arbitration on a shorter deal. But giving him that because of what he did last year, I think it was deserved.
It's a huge win for Krebs, both on term and dollars, because neither, I don't believe, would have been imaginable going into the season. But I believe the big winner to be because he has never played a single minute for this team. Connor McMichael getting 6 years with his new team. Like, I don't know about you folks. I like to test drive things. Like, seriously.
Even if it's just around the block.
And I was underwhelmed by Connor McMichael very, very early on in his career. And then, of course, he stuffed it to the Amherst in their Calder Cup with run Hershey.
Yeah.
But it was not him alone. It was a very well-balanced team, obviously, that won consecutive years. And then he really burst onto the scene with Washington 2 years ago. Last year had a dip, ironically, just like the guy he was traded for in Jordan Kyrou. But honestly, 6 years and $40.5 million for a player who has never played a minute for you, I think that is the most fascinating player
to
watch.
So it's over $6 million per year.
Yeah.
That's like, a lot.
The Jets know what Cole Perfetti is. It's easier to give you 6 years. Right?
And
the Blues had to do this because they traded Jordan Kyrou in the process.
Yeah, and look, Connor McMichael ended up being a really good player for the St. Louis Blues, but there's also age factor. There's a lot that comes into play right now. I agree with you. I think that this is has a potential to be the worst contract given out in this group of UFA. Like, you look at everybody else.
It could also be great.
Because
they're asking him to be a top six, and depending on who he plays with and special teams and all the rest of it, like, he may immediately set a new high in points, and then everybody goes, wow, what a great deal by Doug Armstrong on the way out.
And that's why Washington was so good 2 years ago.
Right.
They won around, and then they dropped last year.
And Protas were right around 30 goals, and
Strome was great.
Tom Wilson had gone over 30, and Ovi was still Ovi. Yeah, it's amazing what those play. And now, speaking of.
No, Washington is going to be good without him because they made some big deals.
Okay. I confirmed yesterday in your absence that I have got to the stage in life where I could not care less about who wears a C on their jersey. But for the sake of appeasing the audience and our producer, Sam, there are 10 teams that have captain vacancies right now.
Yes.
So please rattle
Which is
through
a lot.
These 10 teams and who is the best fit for new captain. And we start with Anaheim.
And I'm Leo Carlson.
Oh, I would have gone Jackson Lacombe or Troy Terry.
Well, so I thought Jackson Lacombe, but then I'm like, you know what? Leo Carlson, 5 years, $18 million. And I know sometimes you pick the best player, the highest paid player, whatever. But I think Leo Carlson has that ability to maybe be a captain.
Yeah.
So why not do it now and kind of make everything as perfect? He's not only our best player, he's going to be our captain. So I'm going Leo Carlson.
You can't pick Joakim Harju, but we're doing the Bruins.
Hot takes, Henry would have been Harry.
Wouldn't he be a good guy to roll out to the media after every game?
Oh, he would be so good. So the Boston Bruins have two choices. My top choice would be Charlie McAvoy, but I think David Pastrnak is also probably going to be a choice there.
My guess is Pasta doesn't want it, so I think McAvoy is the natural one there.
You know, that's what I thought too.
Is it Connor Bedard's Hawks?
No, for me, it's Patrick Kane for 2 years.
Bo Byram. Come on.
Oh, no. I get what you're saying. Again, how about not test driving the Bo Byram situation and giving him $12.5 million?
Okay.
That starts in a year from now. But I have Patrick Kane return. They give him that money and everything. Come home for 2 years, be the captain, move it on to Connor Bedard in 2 years from now.
Is Ryan Lomberg the right choice for Columbus?
Lamborghini would be a good choice. This is kind of funny because I have Werenski, and then I'm like, with everything that happened this year, maybe it's a way to mend everything.
Like,
then I'm like, okay, be our captain. Fantilli could be that. But you know, you mentioned Lamborghini. Mathieu Olivier as your captain. That guy has leadership and toughness written all over him.
Yeah, I don't know if it means captaincy, but the Kings are now with a void in the absence of Anze Kopitar. What do they do?
Quinn Byfield, Brent Clark.
I would go Byfield first, but
Anderson. I put Mikey Anderson.
Mikey
there.
Is my 1B after Byfield being the 1A. And part of that is contractually related, but I think there's also a quiet, consistent belief and trust in the player. The Islanders are also interesting because they always seem to have just a significant amount of change every year or questions around them every year.
Well, it's not interesting to me, or I can't even debate this Matthew Schaefer.
Right.
100%. I mean, it's not even debatable.
Okay, so Ottawa would be debatable, no? Or not?
Yes. I have three names on my list. My number one is Jake Sanderson. And my number two is Tim Stützle. And then my number three is Dylan Cousins, who I think has always taken an interest in that leadership role, whatever. He was traded there, played really well for the Ottawa Senators. I think he could be one of the leader, but I think Jake Sanderson would be the guy.
He's top of my list is Jake. It's Celebrini and the Sharks, right?
For sure.
Okay, I mean, St. Louis now gets really interesting because I think it's a couple of what we believe to be former future Sabres at one point. I think it's either Thomas or Parayko.
Jimmy Snuggerud is on my list. Of like you it's want little, to go in a different yeah, de- yeah he's still young entry level
no it's
deal.
Not the young it's just I don't know if he's established enough yet but
I get that and I'm like maybe in a year from now I'd know more about Jake Neighbors or Jimmy Snuggerud but I do think Robert Thomas would be the pick.
Okay, so we've gone through nine teams. There is one other team.
Do we care?
I have Vancouver. None. I don't think they should, of all the teams that should not name a captain
you
for this year.
You will love what I wrote down.
It's not Vancouver. They can't do it.
Paul Cotter. I'm like,
rock
yes,
on Paul.
Paul Cotter, we saw you play with the Henderson Silver Knights one night when we were in Vegas, you and I on our date duffer. Now, I have Brock Besser because, look, he was rumored to be traded, but he decided to re-sign in Vancouver and will probably be there for a long time.
All right.
So that would be that. But I agree with you, none or Paul Cotter.
Okay, the season is approaching. It's not as rapid as we would like, but everybody's still talking about it. The upcoming Sabres season 26-27 campaign. Single game tickets are on sale now. You can experience every big moment in blue and gold, black and red. Just be here for all the excitement. Get your seats now, sabres.com/tickets. Andrew Podorolski is with us next in studio on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
It's our annual event as the season kicks off. It's Hockey Fest presented by Body Armor. We want you to be out on the streets in front of KeyBank Center with your team competing in the street hockey tournament. It's for all ages, divisions, and skill levels. Like, it's wide open, and every participant receives a gift and a couple of tickets for the Sabres preseason game against Columbus on September 22nd. You can register your team now at sabres.com/hockeyfest. Can't wait to see you there. So glad to see Andrew Podorolski with us in studio today. And the obvious question, Andrew, did you come in to take more money from Marty as you have apparently done in the past?
Yeah, no, it's nice to get free meals from Marty. Some Buy cash beers, on the side. Yeah. So
your golf game is spectacular. Let's just put it that way. And I think I can compete with guys like you, and then I completely fall on my face. I think that's why we haven't played in the last couple of years. Number one, you're busy. You leave early because you play up in Europe. But number two, I'm like, I don't play as much as I used to anymore. So
yeah.
I think the last time we did that trip to Rochester, we did like
Oak Hill and
Oak Hill
CCR.
Yeah. CCR in the morning, Oak Hill in the afternoon. And I think I was on pain medicine because I had bruised ribs that day. That's why. That's my excuse. So.
Yeah, no, it's always fun to go on a trip with you guys, and it's hard to get any words in with you and Leggio, but we had a good time.
It's a goalie thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. We had a good time, and I definitely missed those trips, but I feel like I'm pretty same as you now. I don't get to play as much. Three kids happened since those last trips.
Wow,
and yeah, short summers. Not a good recipe for golf.
Williamsville native, of course, Nichols, Junior Sabres, and a long, long professional hockey resume now. Andrew, what is it like now at this stage of your life after this journey that continues again with another upcoming season in the KHL?
Yeah, I'd say it's new motivation for me. Like I said, I got the three kids now, and they're kind of who I play for, and they're my motivation to keep going. But since I've been a little kid, I've always, dreamed of playing hockey, playing at a high level, playing in the NHL, and it's kind of still where I'm at today. People still ask me this summer, like, oh, when do you think you're going to be done? And that question kind of frustrates me. I feel like I'm still playing at a high level, and I don't feel like I've slowed down at all. So I just want to keep going until I can't anymore. And I love the game. I got an amazing family that supports me, and I want to play for them now. So
you mentioned the kids. I didn't even know that until years later. But so Anne-Marie's aunt and uncle used to live down the street from Potts. So we would have like get together and birthday parties, and he'd be playing street hockey in the street duffer, and I'd be like coming out and playing a little bit with those guys, and the cousins and all of that. So you were a big Sabres fan, obviously, and you loved hockey. Do your kids like have favorite team? Are they following the Sabres? Are they following you? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're following me in my games, but now it's kind of hard for them when they're at 9 in the morning and they're in a different language. So it's tough for them to fully understand that. But I would say the Sabres, after the year they had this year and the buzz, like my youngest son, he's in like a pre-K school, but Like they had days where they all wear Sabres jerseys to school and the buzz around the playoffs, and I'd keep them up when I came home to, you know, watch the last series. And it's just really cool to kind of see like how now the Sabres doing well sparks that generation and kind of reminds me of, you know, when I was a little kid and got my interest into hockey.
Is it true that you would only answer to the name Dom? That when is, you were very young?
Yeah, I mean, that's my mom's famous story, that she'd yell down, I'd be in the basement shooting pucks or playing mini sticks, and she'd say, Andrew, dinner's ready, and I wouldn't come up, and then she'd say, Dom, dinner's ready, and I'd run up the stairs. So, yeah, I remember asking Marty on those trips, you know, asking for good Dom stories and stuff, because, you know, he was my inspiration to start playing the game, and yeah, no, it's pretty cool to come full circle now and get to hear those stories.
Did you ever try to play goalie like Hasek, though, or were your parents saying, nope, you're not going to be a goalie? Like most parents do. It's like they're scared of the cost of the equipment and being the one kid that will give up the bad goal and all the parents are going to stare at you. So did you try? Did you even go in the crease one little bit?
Yeah, there was zero pressure from my parents whatsoever. They're just good, you know, sport parents. But I always loved when it was my turn to put the gear on when we'd rotate around the team. But ultimately, I think scoring goals was a little bit more fun for me. And I think I was a better skater than most kids when I was younger. So that kind of took over.
I'd like to think that that rotation still exists. Does it in, like, house leagues and things like that? Because
Absolutely.
100% couldn't wait for it to be my turn. Yeah. And then after a year of doing it, I was like, yeah, I'd like to score, you know, and, it does change. But I think the opportunity for people to just experience it is the best.
Yeah, I think it that's the way you fall in love with it. And then you start with like six or seven kids that want to do it. Mm-hmm. Then the next year there's five. Then the next year there's three and two. And then you kind of wean it down to the last little bit. But you talked about shooting pucks or playing mini sticks in your basement. Now, you obviously, you know, your wife is a big part of, you guys met like a long time ago and, you know, got the kids, but was it better to go to her house and shoot pucks in her basement because they had the pretty sweet setup over there?
Yeah, no, that's also one of the funny stories her dad tells all the time, that I'd go over and I'd go right down to the basement. They had a great synthetic ice with boards and net. I'd shoot pucks for like an hour or two and then I'd be like, see you, Haley, and like get out of there and wouldn't even talk to her, but I'm sure
what
it's exaggerated a little bit, but yeah, no, they're an amazing.
Did you meet in high school or before?
Yeah,
that?
We met at Nichols in high school, and they're a huge hockey family. They all played. Her dad loves the game. He's had Sabre season tickets forever.
Big sponsor with the Junior Sabres next door, so that's good.
Yeah, no, so they're a huge hockey loving family, and yeah, we had a good time.
Your parents, though, sports background too?
Yeah, so my mom played Division I softball. Well, she started junior college at ECC, and then after 2 years of there, she went to University of Iowa. Okay. And she's a crazy athlete and super competitive, and I owe a lot to her in my career. And then my dad, he played three sports in high school. He went to St. Francis, and yeah, just a huge, like, I can't remember anything else being on the TVs growing up other than whatever sporting events going on.
And is he involved in football in some way?
He's a ref, yeah. He refs local high school football. He's done that for a while. So I don't know how he does that, but
is he patient? Is like he's
yeah,
a,
yeah.
Is he
he's,
very patient?
He's a very patient, calm demeanor. And So
good
so
for him.
Friday night he's occupied. It's like he's on the field somewhere in some high school.
Yeah, exactly.
So, that's awesome.
No, they're good Buffalo people. Love Buffalo sports, and that's just how I grew up.
Well, we talked about like the goalie rotation, but another thing that I think is very important is playing a lot of different sports. Like, what else did you play? You're a great hockey player, and I use the word great because Duffer says you always say great, but you know, three-time AHL scoring champs,
Short list
MVP, Calder Cup winners, like that. There's a lot that you've done. You're a great player, but did you play other sports to build that athleticism in any way?
For sure. I mean, baseball, I played all the way through my senior year at Nichols. I had a great passion for baseball. I love it. I was really sad when I had to stop playing. And then, yeah, I mean, I played everything, like basketball in some leagues in the winter, golf all the time, soccer at some point. So kind of whatever was going on, I just love to be outside, love to play sports. So try to do the same now with my kids, not just one sport.
You talk about golf, and we talked about it, you know, taking my money on the golf course, but you did play in the Porter Cup a few years back. If you had to rank the nerves on the first year of the Porter Cup or the first face-off of the Calder Cup final or your first shift in the NHL, where does it all rank?
Or the first child being delivered.
Well, I'm talking sports. Like yeah. Life is life, but sports. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
These are all intense moments.
The child one was out of my control. So
true.
That's got to be up there. I'd say Calder Cup, I was pretty comfortable in all those situations just because, you know, you've been there, you've worked for that, you know you belong. Porter Cup and first NHL shift. I remember my first NHL shift's the fastest I've ever back-checked in my life. But I'd say Porter Cup probably, and I had my good buddy Ryan Schmelzer on the back, who's another local Buffalo guy like me, and he knows nothing about golf. We had a pretty funny story. So he's missing his two front teeth, and like guys in the first day, like I'm playing with kids who are playing like at high D1 schools, like Florida or wherever, and they're like, missing your teeth or something, because they have like their dads or their coaches on the bag. But finally I call him in for a read. I hadn't all day. I'm like, left to right or right to left? He's like, oh, left to right, like a cup. And I had it going right to left, so I was like, all right, get out of here. I put it right to left and I make it, and he comes over me, goes, what the heck?
I didn't listen to him,
but he just took my mind off of everything. But it was, I mean, just the nerves on the golf course, as you know, like a sport that you're not comfortable in, I think is why it makes it so hard.
I'm not going to lie. I was hoping you had missed that putt, and it was his read that would have been correct. Andrew Podorowski.
One of the few ones I made.
He's with us here in studio. When you look back at the journey post-Nichols and Junior Sabres, like, take us through those next steps in college and just what it has now enabled you to have in life.
Yeah. No, I mean, I spent 2 years in Cedar Rapids, and I'd say my coach there, Mark Carlson, for those who don't know him, he's like super intense, super demanding, long, hard practices, training, everything, and he kind of turned me into a man. So once I went to UNH, I felt like I was, you know, kind of steps ahead of everybody else just from what I went through in juniors, and I owe a lot to him. He was a great coach, and then, yeah, I just kind of took off from there. I mean, I was an undrafted guy, didn't know what to expect, and I think every level, and I started doing well, I gained more and more confidence, and I think that goes a long way, and start to believe in yourself and your game, and yeah, it's just kind of just taking it how it goes and having a good time.
What's the KHL experience like? Guy Boucher, who I know well, coach in the NHL, Tampa, assistants with the Leafs, and he was in Ottawa and others. Obviously, he's demanding, and he has structure, and it's like... He's a mini Torts, I think. But anyway, but, you know, different cities, different cultures, different language, different teammates, different game. What's the experience like in Omsk in the KHL?
It's been awesome. I had a great experience last year. And, I mean, I owe so much of that to Guy. Like you said, he's so demanding and wants the best. But his hockey mind is unlike any I've actually ever seen before. Mm-hmm. How he thinks the game and sees the game and has our team dialed in every night is amazing. And the way he runs our power play, we were running at like high 30% for a lot of the year, and we were number one in the league. And how he sees the power play is incredible. And yeah, he's pushed me, and I felt like at a certain point in my career, I kind of was plateauing out in the AHL, and I wasn't getting pushed enough anymore, and no one's fault. But Guy took that as a challenge, and he said he thinks that I could be, or I have way more in my tank, and that I could be an NHL player, and that he was going to push me all year. And I love that. I love being coached hard and getting pushed. So Guy's been awesome, and we're hoping to take another step this year and win a championship.
That game six last year, up 2-0, yeah. Potts. Like, yeah. I almost called him and say, how the heck did you guys lose that game? It was, what, two goals in the last 45 seconds or so? That made
33
seconds. Truly. He got scored with the goalie out with 33 seconds left, and then the next faceoff, 15 seconds later, it's in the back of the net again. I couldn't believe it. That was like to go to the finals, right?
Yeah. We were up 3-1 in that series, and that was game six at home, up 2-0. Truly, I mean, there's no good way to put it.
Yeah,
it was a tough finish, and what made me like relate to that was like, this is like a Buffalo loss. Like, no joke. Like, that's literally why I came home and I like called my wife and I was like, this is something that would happen to like the Bills or the Sabres. Like, it was
not
just,
anymore. No, that's not happening anymore.
So we still need to work on game sevens, unfortunately.
That's right.
I am fascinated by what you just said about Guy Boucher and how he pushed you, but also the plateauing in the American Hockey League. Do you think, because you said there's no blame to be attached to that, do you think coaches get to a point because of where you were at in your career as an MVP, multiple Calder Cups, that for some reason, instinctively, they just back off a little bit? Like, we know what you're going to give, so we're going to focus on everybody else? Because for you to have this desire to be so receptive to new coaching and a different approach and that, like, it's really fascinating.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's too much on the coaches. I mean, the AHL's definitely a very developmental now, and they got to pay attention to the young guys and develop them, and that's their primary focus. But I'd say more so just the game. I mean, the AHL is getting a lot younger, mm-hmm. and I just think the KHL is a little bit of a step up in terms of pace and, like, the players and older and just a higher level, and I think that's ultimately what drove me too. I mean, coaches can only tell me so much, but I feel like in the AHL, you know, I could get away with not moving my feet as much or little stuff like that and still go and have a couple points and, you know, do well. But in the KHL, if you don't do that, like, you're not going to have success. So you're forced to, you know, step your game up. And it's kind of what I wanted to do here and, like, do that in the NHL and get an opportunity. And but I'd say just, you know, when you keep taking levels up and or you keep taking the step up in each level, that you're going to force to either do better and develop or not.
So he said he believes you can get back to the NHL?
Yeah, I mean.
And do you believe that? And how much is that still a driving force?
I mean, like I said, since I was a little kid, and to this day, I tell my wife this. It's, I don't know if it's embarrassing or not, but, like, I have dreams of, like, still scoring in the NHL, and then I'll wake up and be like, oh, it's just a dream, you know, like. But that's what lights my fire, and, like, I still want it so badly, and I just want an opportunity, and it sucks. I feel like I kind of got labeled just an AHL player, but I never really got the chance. You know, if I would have gotten, say, 20 games or 10 games in a row, like, and I didn't do well with that, part of me would be able to live with that, I guess, that I had a chance. But just not having that chance is kind of what drives me and keeps me going, and I know it's not a conventional path, but I want to say I want to write my own story, and who knows? Taking it one year at a time, I'm trying to push myself to keep getting better every year, and we'll see what happens. But, yeah, right now, loving my time over there and the city of Omsk, they deserve a championship, and I think it'd be pretty cool to win one.
Now, Jonathan Quick retired, so maybe that's the opportunity you needed, so you don't hit him in the head again. That's the story you told us the last time you were in here, because you clawed him right in the side of the head, and he was mad about that. Now, another thing that you do and do well for teams that, you know, may be looking for a glue guy, a guy that bring the teams together, is you got smoking with pot that has been taking everybody by storm. And I had a huge day Sunday for my son's birthday on the smoker, wings, and whatever. Well, we have a clip of you with David Ledger, I believe that is, and getting the ribs going on the smoker. Let's listen to this one.
Welcome to Smoking with Pot.
Today I'm smoking some ribs with a very special guest and good friend of mine, United States Olympian David Ledger. Start off with a spank, watch Dave struggle to remove the membrane, but he stuck with it. Anything's possible, kids. Next, we're going to hit these with some mustard as a binder. Dave went with the meat church. I put some Cusos. Then we tossed them on the Traeger for a few hours to smoke. In the meantime, Dave got some reps in. This man takes no days off. These babies had a great color to them. It was time to wrap. We did grass-fed butter, coconut sugar, and the lineage honey. After the rain, we let Leo paint on some barbecue sauce and tossed it back on so it would tack up for that beautiful color. Let's see what the Leggio boys think after their first bite.
It's pretty juicy.
Amazing. You're a natural.
But you just did ribs again, right? You just posted one recently where that one was maybe from a few years ago, but you did ribs again. Do you do them different now, or are you still doing the same rub and the same everything?
I try to change it up a little bit, just either, you know, different rub or different technique. But the ones we just did were like the beef back, the big ribs, so... those are actually, like, probably one of my favorites of what we've actually done. But, no, Dave's a character, and he's free entertainment for sure.
Yeah, and you did that also in Omsk, right? You fed the boys. You had the big steaks going on.
Looks so good.
Like, how did they take the maybe American approach to the cooking and the sauna and everything?
Yeah, I mean, it was one of my first days that I was in Omsk. We were in the sauna after training camp practice, and they all started grilling. They're like, hey, you're going to cook us some meat, right? Like, they all saw my Instagram, so they were on me from the start, and it was fun to do that and bring a little Russian style to, you know, what they do. And I think it's just fun camaraderie with the boys, get them all together, and kind of just started as that, as a joke. I'd have guys over in San Jose, and finally someone's like, we should film this or do it, and I don't know, we just did it, and I posted it, and yeah, the rest is history.
All right, Charlotte, Raleigh, San Diego, Chicago, Coachella Valley, Seattle, San Jose again, and Omsk. What's the nicest place you've lived as a pro?
I mean, San Diego, if you want, like,
yes,
nightlife and all that. Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. But, like, shout out Coachella Valley. If you're, like...
Yes, I haven't been yet. I've been very close.
You want amazing weather and a golf and just, like, low-key, like, you can't beat that place.
You had Balsma as a coach there, right?
Yeah.
Disco Dan.
Yeah, remember how great they were in Seattle's first couple of years. Like, I mean, they really did it well there. Nice new rink and all the rest of it, right?
Oh, it was incredible, yeah. And the community kind of bought into our team. We went to the finals both years.
Yeah.
And it was incredible, yeah.
Damn Hershey.
Damn Hershey, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
And then you guys fly all the way here waiting to see the second year who was going to win between Hershey and who are they playing against? I don't remember.
Cleveland.
Yeah. Game 7. Oh, my gosh.
And then you waited to see what's going to happen.
We, like, rented an Airbnb in the mountains of Hershey, and we were, like, watching Game 6 and 7, like, at the Airbnb and stuff. And, yeah, because we didn't want to fly all the way back to Coachella because we finished in Milwaukee early. And, yeah. No, it's tough.
Real quick, we're tight for time. Are you going to make it to the new stadium?
Go Bills.
Before you head back.
Sadly, I'm not, no. Oh.
Okay, but how excited are you for it and for the upcoming season?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, even the game we lost last year in playoffs, it was at, like, 2:30 in the morning, and we had a, like, 3 p.m. game. And, like, I set my alarm up. I watched the whole thing. I don't miss a game. Die hard as it gets. So I love the Bills, ride or die. All the guys who have played with me in my career, they know, like, how I'm going to play that night on a Sunday, whether the Bills win or lose. So.
They've won a lot more, so that's good for you.
Andrew, thank you. Career winnings from Marty, how much have you taken?
Ooh.
It's undetermined.
Undetermined? Yeah. Okay.
We'll
get an update next summer when you come back. Good luck this season as well, and thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me, boys.
Andrew Podorelski, our guest in studio, will continue Sabres Live with a little Dazzled and Disturbed coming up. Stay with us.
Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
We are 2 days away from the next Sabres Live in the Saberhood. It's going to be happening at the legendary Amherst Ale House. Amherst Pizza and Ale House, officially.
Yes.
But we all know it as the Ale House. It's in Gettysville, and you will want to be there with us Thursday, noon to 1. Sabres trivia, prizes, of course, the whole show, and Sabres alum Craig Muni joining us on site. All right. This is worthy of sound up. Jason Benetti leads us off here with the call in D&D.
Dazzled and
disturbed.
This happened in Detroit. It's happened before, but last night was worthy of an encore. Here it is.
The chase for the squirrel is on, and the squirrel is in the corner, and the squirrel is still eluding an entire horde of grounds crew members, and the squirrel's free once again. Hemmed in? No, I won't be hemmed in. I have freedom on my mind. Trying to go between the legs, and eventually he gets away again and hops through the towel. And up through another towel.
Duffer, you and I were walking back from Little Caesars Arena back to the hotel last year, and we went by Comerica Park, and there was no squirrels in sight. That's because they're all in the building. That's happened a lot of time in Detroit.
Incredibly,
where there's squirrels.
One night in Los Angeles, I was sitting at a bar watching the Jays and the Tigers, and the same thing happened.
Yeah.
And the Tigers were getting blown out. The stadium was almost empty. And the game shifted to
the
following
squirrel.
The exploits of the squirrel.
Is that
for
when he
like
was walking on the fence?
An entire inning.
I remember seeing that,
it
too.
It was so bizarre. Okay, birthdays. We have to do this. Hudson Fashing. How old do you think he is?
I would say as the best soccer player in the state of Minnesota, he's probably 31.
He's 31.
Oh, I got it.
Do you know how many goals he scored with the Sabres?
Two.
One in his first ever game, and then he only played 22 games with Buffalo, and it was spread out over 3 years.
He scored a big one with the Islanders, kicking the puck in the net. That counted. That's all that cares.
Happy birthday, former Sabres Jim Korn. Evan Rodriguez, now Devil, and Hap Myers, who was an original Sabre in Game 1 back in '70. We'll see you tomorrow.